Hello, fellow Redbirds. Welcome to Bird Fans Forever podcast number 55. Please follow us on our @BirdFansForever Twitter account to be notified of our latest podcast videos. Also, go to our website, www.birdfansforever.com, where you can find a list of our previous podcasts. Finally, go visit Bird Fans Forever on YouTube and slam dunk that subscribe button. Our YouTube site has our Redbird game archive, where you can find a classic Redbird game to watch. We've been getting a lot of videotapes from friends of the podcast that John's been transcribing to our digital library. A good game from our archive to watch that includes our guest on the call is the 2017 New Mexico versus ISU game at Redbird Arena that results in a Redbird win. You'll be familiar with our guest today if you watch any amount of Redbird men's or women's basketball games. In fact, you'll know his face or definitely his voice if you watch the girls or boys Illinois State basketball finals in the last 25 years. He's also covered MLB postseason, NCAA Final Four, PGA and LGPA tour events, NFL, NBA, NHL games, and NASCAR races. Please welcome to the podcast, Kurt Pegler.
Hello and welcome to Bird Fans Forever, episode 55. Our guest today is Kirk Pegler, broadcaster. He's broadcast for TV10 and for 31 WNBD. Oh, I tried, Kirk. All right, how you doing? Welcome.
It's a pleasure to be with you guys. I really appreciate the invitation. I'm sorry it's taken me months to finally make up. When you first asked me, it was like 1997, and I'm finally getting onto your show. That's great.
I walked up to you at the Horton game, and I'm like, hey, do you remember me? You did. Your cohort also announcing the game, Dan, didn't remember me.
Dan Rohn, yeah.
And so at least I could talk to you and somebody remembered the old guys there. So, yeah. So we start the episode exactly the same way with everybody because we are not creative here at Bird Fans Forever. How'd you get to ISU?
It's always a great first question. It's nice to hear everybody's backstory. Mine is pretty simple. When I was a high school senior, I went to a college night at my high school, which, you know, was rows and rows and rows of college recruiters coming into a typical high school to see if they couldn't pull you to their various school. And when I came to the Illinois State booth, I grabbed all the brochures and all the necessarily paperwork, all the nice color, brochures that were there. And I struck up a conversation with the recruiter, and they said, what do you want to study and all that? When I said I wanted to do television or radio, broadcast journalism, they said, well, I think our school is perfect for you, and started explaining all the pros of TV10 and WZND, the student television and student radio stations. And I was very intrigued, and they started naming some of the people that had gone through the program. And I thought, like, one of them was Dan Rohn, who at the time was at WGN in Chicago, and I'm from the suburbs, and I'm watching Dan Rohn on television. So I'm like,
we all watch Dan Rohn.
Yeah, that's a pretty good. If I could do that, that would be great. So I took a college visit in the spring of my senior year, and I went to Illinois State, and the first guy I met on campus was Dave Coley, right? The guy with the big red marching machine, what a first image that you have. And, I got a nice tour, and it was a sunny day. I mean, it was a Chamber of Commerce type day for them that day. And I just kind of fell in love with the campus and with the history of the TV10 and WZND programs. I thought this is the right place for me if I want to do this broadcast journalism thing, which is something I kind of always really, I mean, people say, well, when did you first think about you want, listen, when I was 9 years old, I'm doing play-by-play in my backyard of our wiffle ball games, right? And our backyard in the neighborhood where I lived in butted right up against the grade school that I went to. I could jump my fence and be at my grade school, but there were baseball diamonds at the grade school. So I would go to those games, and I would softball games and baseball games and flag football games. Whatever was going on there, I felt like I was doing on the sidelines. I was doing play-by-play. I have a little Panasonic, I still have it, a little Panasonic tape recorder that my aunt got me for my birthday when I was 9. And I was interviewing people, and I was doing play-by-play up in the bleachers, and it was just always kind of in my blood. And felt like maybe Illinois State was going to be this thing that took it out of my blood and maybe gave me a profession. And as it turned out, that was it. But honestly, it was a simple senior night at my high school. So all those college recruiters that are out and about and driving from one college night to the next and wondering if it ever works, in my case, it worked.
Did ISU make in the NCAA your senior high school? Was that the clincher?
Correct. Yeah, that was when ISU. That was the first of those 3 years when they made the basketball NCAA. That 82-83 season. That was my senior year of high school, and actually the games were on in Chicago on one of the. I think Channel 44 was carrying some of the Missouri Valley games. I remember when ISU played DePaul because DePaul was the big. At that time, the Mark Aguirre, Terry Cummings, that whole early 80s DePaul team was capturing the city and all their games were on TV. And I think the first Illinois State game I ever saw was when they played DePaul, and it was at Horton, and it was on television. And the place was electric, and Ricky Johnson's dunking, and the place is going crazy, and it's Rick Lamb and Lou Stefanovic and Michael McKinney and that whole thing. And then I got interested. I thought, okay, if I'm going to go to this school, maybe I should watch and get to know the personnel. And by golly, they're going to the NCAA tournament. And then they did it my freshman year, and they did it my sophomore year. I thought this happens every year. You know, this is great. These teams are going to be going to the tournament every year. But, I came right at that time when Bob Donowald had the program really humming at that point. Yeah.
So then the next year – your junior year is my freshman year, so we failed you completely because we didn't make the tournament. Thank you for reminding me of that. Thank you. I appreciate that. And then, but sophomore year, I was a redshirt, and Derek Sanders got us at least to the third round of the NIT.
Yeah, it was a slap into reality when I realized, hey, you don't just roll the basketballs out in October and every year you're going to go to the NCAA tournament. There was an NIT that year too. So in my years when I was at ISU, there was a lot of postseason, a lot of wins, a lot of fun basketball. And all of that, of course, was at Horton Fieldhouse. It wasn't until a couple of years after I got out of school that Redbird Arena came into the mix. But I do remember that when I think I was a senior, that was when they voted on whether or not they were going to use student funds to build this new arena and et cetera, et cetera. I used to live out on West Campus. My first year I lived out at Tri-Towers, so I knew the plot of the land where they were going to put the arena, and it was literally right across from where I could look out the window and see baseball games back then, and they moved the ball diamond out. So I always felt like I was somewhat connected to that whole, that all happened right when I was a student, and it was interesting to see how that progressed.
Yeah, awesome. So,
hey, Kurt, you mentioned you got the season ticket package, right, the football, the combo.
Yeah.
So we did the same thing, John Diner and I just want to know, did you do what we did? We actually, this is how nuts it was back then. We camped out.
Right. Yeah.
Outside of Horton.
I remember crazy like us.
I remember people
in tents that were sleeping out to get the tickets. And I thought it was crazy. Now, again, like I said, I lived on West Campus. So I was just a stone's throw. I was probably 500 steps away from where I had to be. So I didn't have to, pitch a tent and sleep out. But I think for $30 or $25, it was super cheap. I got all the home games for football, all the home games for basketball. It came out to be like $1 a game or something crazy like that. And I thought, how could you pass this up? Even if I only go to half the games, it's going to be it. But yeah, I remember because I had to walk kind of past those encampments to get to my dorm that people were, because I thought, what's this line? Because, Genesis opened their world tour at Horton Fieldhouse my freshman year. They opened their world tour at Horton Fieldhouse, and I remember that people were camping out for that. So when I see the line again, I'm like, oh, hey, what band is coming this time, And no, but it was for basketball and football. But yes, right. I do remember that people were like camping out to get first in line to get your tickets.
So let's talk about that Horton experience, right, as a fan. And then you did some student broadcasting as well.
I did, yeah.
Can you talk about the difference of being there as a fan and as a student? And then later, you got to call a couple of games at Horton.
Correct, yeah. In my head, I can still picture where my seat is at Horton Fieldhouse. It was in the end zone on the baseline, probably 15 rows up, way up. But that's when the bleachers went all the way up, behind behind the backboard. And I still remember games. I remember seeing Jeff Hornacek play there when Iowa State came in, and these guys, and I'm like, I almost in my brain can picture exactly where I was, where I was seated and all that kind of stuff. And obviously it was electric in there. It was loud. It was fun. It was unlike anything that I had experienced in high school. So when I first got a whiff of that in college, I'm like, this is a lot of fun. And the teams were winning. I mean, you know, these teams.
Except for the game you just named.
Yeah, that was a hard game.
Hornets, we had him.
Yeah, that was probably why that one sticks in my brain, was that was one that got away, right? But I just, it was so much fun. It was, the games were electric, and it was bleacher seating, right? And everybody, it was loud in there, and the personalities. It was Nolan Richardson and Dick Versace and Bob Donawald. I mean, it was like a movie, you know. People are scripting these and casting these characters that came in, and the league was so good back then too, with, you know, Xavier McDaniel and I'm thinking Lewis Lloyd, Paul Pressey, Benoit Benjamin. I'm thinking about all these guys who played in the NBA. I'm like, I saw these guys, right? They were like, I was 15 rows away from these guys, you know, that kind of thing. It was such a neat experience as a fan. But then you're right. Then I started getting involved with the play-by-play with the radio station at WZND. And now you got to put your broadcaster hat on, and you can't be screaming at Lewis Lloyd, and you can't be, you know, waving your hands when these guys are shooting free throws. And those games I did were up in the press box, which was way up in a crow's nest. You had to take this spiral staircase to get up to the crow's nest and work the games from up there. It was a great vantage point. But that was, again, old school basketball, high up looking down. And by the way, that was also the spot for football. So when I did football games, I went up that spiral staircase. But instead, you looked out the window, the back window, and now you were looking into, you know, Hancock Stadium, which was great to be a part of, too. But it was just, I just remember how loud and how electric it seemed like every game was. It probably wasn't 100% of the games, but it just seemed like every single game was a sellout. Get there early, get your seat, the place is going to be jumping. And then when I had a chance in these last 2 years to call the games on these return to Horton games, it was kind of chilling to walk back in and see a floor there again, and to see, you know, people in the bleachers there again wearing their red. It did take me back to like 19. I had chills like the first time I walked in there. It was 1984 all over again, you know, and it was just really a neat thing to be a part of these last 2 years to do those games too. So Horton just has a really soft spot in my heart, you know, as far as that's concerned. And I'm sure a lot of fans would tell you the same thing.
It's amazing how loud it is too. I mean,
yeah.
Those last 2 years, it's only less than 4,000, maybe around 4,000 they had in there. So just over 50% of what we used to have. You know, we could be up to 7,500. And we're sitting next to each other, and we can barely hear each other. That's how loud it was with 4,000.
Yeah.
And you remember it being loud, but you kind of forget that it's like, it's so loud, you have to scream to talk to the person next to you.
Right, yeah.
It's inaudible.
It was just unlike, like I said, it was just unlike a lot of experience. And now, obviously, people want creature comforts in their arenas, and they want cup holders in front of them. I mean, there was none of that stuff. It was bare bones, and people were there for the product on the court, and it was so much fun. And I went to the women's games there, too, and that atmosphere you just can't recreate, and it was so much fun.
Did you ever think, sitting in the North bleachers, that thing was just going to collapse and we were going to have a horrible incident where thousands of people just died in an instant?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, especially, like I said, my seats weren't in the first row. I had to go up, like, probably 15 levels, and the first couple times I'm like, I hope this is safe. Then once the game starts, you don't even think about it. You're just so, you know, into the game that it became just part of the deal. And I kind of liked sitting up there. I saw the plays develop from the end zone there, and it was interesting to kind of watch the Hersey Hawkinses of the world, and like I said, the Rick Lambs and the Matt Taphorns, and those fun teams with Lou and with Michael McKinney. And, you know, when Lou hit that little baseline, sweet little baseline jump, Lou, and it's echoing throughout the whole place. I mean, it was such a neat atmosphere.
All right, so we've been talking about Horton. I love Horton, but you moved from TV10 and doing all the stuff as a student. How do you get to WNDB?
I did an internship at WBD, and I really have to thank Jay Groves. Was the TV10 director when I was a student. And Jay is an Illinois State guy through and through, and worked in the president's office and all that. He's retired now. But my senior year, he started lining up internships for the people that wanted to pursue, you know, TV jobs. I didn't know if I wanted to do TV or radio at the time. I was doing both on campus. And so he says, well, he used to work at WNBD here in Peoria. And so he says, why don't we do an internship? We send you to Peoria, to WNBD, their radio TV combo. You're going to do both. And maybe then you can figure out, do you want to do radio? Do you want to do TV? If a job opens in one or the other, whatever the situation is. I said, that sounds good. So my last semester on campus, I wasn't ever on campus. I came to Peoria and I did a semester internship at WNBD in 1987. And I was doing radio and television both. And I got hired after the internship. That was the great thing about the internship was it led me to a job. I don't think I still thought all these years later I would still be at WNBD, you know, because in our business, you know, a lot of people work two or three years at one place, they get the experience, and then they move up the ladder and they move up to a bigger city, and they just keep going until maybe they want to get to a spot where they want to settle. And being from Chicago, I kind of thought, well, my goal would be to get to Chicago, to maybe be what Dan Rohn is doing at WGN. But as God would have it, he's just kept me in Peoria, and I've stayed at WNBD, and that was a great situation to start there, to do this internship and to make the contacts there, to do both radio and television. And then I stayed close to Illinois State, too. I mean, if somebody would have said back in 1987, by the way, you're going to start broadcasting Illinois State football and basketball games as part of this gig, I would have never thought that, too. So all of this stuff kind of just played itself out, and here we are these years later that I'm still connected to the university and still connected to Illinois State, where, you know, sometimes when you walk off campus after your last final exam, you think to yourself, is this the last time I'm leaving this campus, right? I mean, I honestly had those thoughts. My last final exam was a night final exam in 1987, and I remember as I was leaving, I kind of took a look around to the quad because I didn't know what was next for me, right? And I thought to myself, is this the next time in television I could do that internship, and then my first job could be in Idaho, and then, you know, and I could be two time zones away, and I could never come back. And it, obviously, thank the Lord, it didn't happen that way. But you just never know. And then here I am doing the Illinois State games all these years later.
So which do you like better? Do you like doing radio, TV?
I think my niche is television. I enjoyed doing the radio one I did. Obviously, when you're calling games on radio, it's a different animal because you don't have the pictures to go with it. You know, when somebody's standing at the free throw line, sometimes you got to say dribbles once, dribbles twice, spins the ball in his hand, here's the shot, it's in. On television, when the guy's at the free throw line, I don't say a word because everybody can see that he's dribbling once, dribbling twice, spinning the ball and shooting it in, you know. That's the time when you can start telling a story or something because there's nothing else happening. So it's a different animal as far as that's concerned. I've loved them both, but you know, I found my niche, and then I didn't know if I was going to be doing play-by-play or was I going to be doing more anchoring and reporting. Which I'm actually blessed that I can do both. The play-by-play thing is a nice kind of offset from the daily grind of doing a nightly newscast. You know, because I do three of them a night, so it's nice when I have a Saturday afternoon football game or a Wednesday evening basketball game to do, and it's been really the best of both worlds as far as that's concerned. But I think my niche wound up being in television.
Well, and you've traveled some also. Like I've seen you and Coach Mo do games back in the mid-2000s, 2011, 12, 13. So you were traveling. So you actually get a couple days break.
Back then, you know, now what's happening is when the Valley went into this relationship with ESPN to do the webcasts of these games that you see on ESPN Plus and such, when Illinois State plays Indiana State, when the game's in Normal, it's the Illinois State crew that's doing the game. When the game's in Terre Haute, it's the Indiana State crew that's doing the game. But back then, you're right, when we had the package, when we signed on to do the package of Illinois State back in 1993 was the first year we did that, we traveled and we did some games. Now, we didn't do all of the games. I think at the high point we did maybe nine games a year, I think, in the Kevin Stallings era, those NCAA tournament teams that we covered, I think nine was the highest that we ever did. And, you know, when you work for a network affiliate, I work for a CBS affiliate, they've got all this primetime show. They don't want you preempting primetime television. They don't want to bump, Murder, She Wrote for Illinois State against Drake, you know, that kind of stuff. But so we would do eight or nine games. And, yeah, there were some road games that we did. But now we pretty much only do the – do the home games, and that's just the nature of the business, so that the people in Evansville do the Evansville games, and the people in Peoria do the games in Peoria, and the people in Springfield, Missouri do the Missouri State games, and when their teams come here, we do them. And that's right, how that works. But yeah, you're right. In the early days, there was some travel.
Yeah.
And by the way, there was some crazy travel. There's some stories that I can tell you. For example, we're coming back one night from Springfield, Missouri, and there's fog in central Illinois, right? And we can't land the plane. We don't know that until about an hour out. They're like, we're fogged in. We're fogged in. You know, these small airports in February, we can't land the plane in normal. Okay, can we land the plane in Peoria? They're fogged in too. They take us to Midway. They take us to Chicago, and we have to land there. This is probably now it's midnight, you know, because the game ended at 9, and by the time we get this far, they land because they said, well, the fog is going to settle, but we're probably not going to get you home till 5 or 6 in the morning. We got to wait for this fog to dissipate. We land the plane at Midway, and we taxi up, and right next to us is the plane for the Charlotte Hornets. Because they can't get out of town either. Of course, they've got the logos and they've got all this Charlotte Hornets stuff and all that. But yeah, everybody was fogged in, and that happened on more than one occasion where we couldn't get back. We couldn't land the plane coming home.
Hey, Kurt. So over the years, you met quite a few people. Tell us about some of your favorites that you met over the years.
Yeah, I think obviously through sports and through ISU, that campus has brought many people back to campus, and they've had speaking engagements where they were able to bring people in. But I remember I met Carlton Fisk because Carlton's son Casey was playing baseball at ISU, and I was a huge White Sox fan. I was like, I'm going to talk to Carl. I was nervous. I couldn't believe it. I was shaking in my boots. I was like, they had just qualified for the NCAA tournament, the baseball team had, and they're having an open practice. And I show up for the practice just to do some interviews, and there's Carlton Fisk, like, taking infield with the team. And so, you know, I just thought, I'm some scared little, you know, second-year reporter. Am I going to go up and talk to Carlton Fisk? And he couldn't have been more pleasant. Of course, he was ecstatic that his son was going to play in an NCAA tournament. Arnold Palmer came to ISU. D.A. Wybring opened the door for that when D.A. was having golf events at ISU and around town, and Arnold Palmer comes to town, and you got a chance to shake hands and interview one of the greatest, you know, athletes of our time. You know, I'm a child of the 70s, so you're telling me I'm going to interview Carlton Fisk and Arnold Palmer in the same summer. You know, even the thing with DA, you know, when he got out of playing, you know, he's now designing golf courses, right? And he designed the TPC up in the Quad Cities where they hold the John Deere Classic up in Silvis. And for the grand opening for that, the first round of golf, he brought some of the PGA guys up there to play. Justin Leonard, Steve Elkington, Peter Jacobson, they kind of had a meet and greet before they opened up that golf course. And there I am walking beside these guys, you know, Justin Leonard. Here's these, you know, these tour champions. So it has opened the door to a lot of fun stuff. The Stanley Cup was in the homecoming parade one year at ISU because Jay Blunk, who is an Illinois State guy, graduated from ISU about the same time I did. We were at school similarly, and he was working for the Blackhawks at the time. And so I'm getting my picture taken with the Stanley Cup at the Illinois State homecoming parade. You know, I mean, just little fun stuff like that. The door is open for those kind of things. And that doesn't even include the great guest speakers that they've had come back for banquets and all that kind of stuff. It's really been, you have a front row seat to a lot of fun stuff there for sure.
You remember the first time that you met John Pemberton? You were in awe of him too, right?
I was in awe of John Pemberton the first time. Holy cow. Here's this guy.
There we go.
And as Coach Bender said, right, you are like the guy with the most points ever wearing number 53, right? I mean, there's no contest about that, right?
No. Rick's got 1,200 points. I'm number two.
You're number two on the list. Okay. Well,
there's only three of us total, right?
Well, so, you got that going for you, right? That's awesome.
Yeah. They retired 53.
Yeah, Rick's got.
They just handed it out by accident one extra time.
Well, honestly, what it was Donewald had Rick Lamb, who scored 1,200 points and have 800 rebounds, and said, "You look like Rick Lamb. You are the next Rick Lamb." and failed miserably at it, right? I think I have a little over 600-700 points and 600-700 rebounds, so, you know.
That's 700 more than most of us, though, so that's pretty good.
It is. And my job was to foul people a lot and make sure that the paint was protected. That was my whole job in life, so.
Well, every team needs an enforcer, right?
Yeah.
And then you had to bang bodies with Mike Williams and some of these other guys, right? I mean, holy cow! I get it. Those were the days.
So, Kurt, how do you prepare for the games? And is there a difference between preparing for a basketball game versus a football game?
Yeah, I would say. I mean, the process is similar, but there's a big difference, you know. First of all, for basketball, there's only five guys on the floor, right? And the roster is usually 12 players, 13 players, 14 players. You know, football, you got 11 on 11, and you've got special teams. And, I mean, the rosters are gigantic. You know, they give you, there's 90 names on the list. So there is a difference as far as that's concerned. It's a little bit easier. I played basketball, so it's a lot easier for me to do basketball than football, but I've enjoyed a lot doing football. The first football game that I did, by the way, for Illinois State was back in the 99 playoffs when that team made it all the way to the national semifinals. We were carrying basketball at the time. Our contract was such that we were carrying the Illinois State basketball games, and the football team was winning playoff games. Todd Berry's team was playing in a quarterfinal, national quarterfinal, and they said, would you guys think about televising this game? It was at Hofstra. It was on Long Island. And, you know, those decisions are made way above my head. But, you know, I get a call from my boss. He's like, hey, I think we're going to do this game. How about preparing for a game, you know? And so we have to get ourselves ready to do a game. And Redbirds wound up winning that game on the road. And then they had to go to Georgia Southern where they played a national semifinal and got beat. But that's kind of where the whole football thing started going, you know, in the right direction. And then I started working games with Boomer Grigsby, and it was great having, you know, Boomer being, a former NFL player and the perspective that he had and that he could bring. And I learned a lot from, you know, working with guys like Bob Morris and Matt Taphorn and Todd Cagle, some of these guys that I've worked with that actually played the game at that level, which I never did.
Wait. We're saying Todd and Matt actually played? I thought they were pretend basketball players.
Oh, well, you guys can split hairs on that if you want.
They needed me to get them open to make all their points.
I see. But preparing for a football game, like, you know, what I'll do is on Tuesdays they have media availability with the current team with Brock Spack, and I'll go and we'll do interviews, and I'll watch practice, and I'll meet with the coordinators a lot of time, the offensive and defensive coordinators, and we'll talk about some tendencies. You know, I'll have questions about what happened right or wrong from the previous game, and maybe get an injury report. And, you know, I'm not getting every ounce of a scouting report like a player would get, but enough background to know what's happening. I'm watching video of previous opponents. If Illinois State football is playing South Dakota State, I'm probably watching their game from the last 2 weeks to get to know their personnel. You know, because I always tell prospective play-by-play people, you got to get their names right, you know, especially I'll talk to college kids or high school kids that want to do this for a living, and I'll say, make sure that you get pronunciations right, because if you're calling a guy Smith and his name is Smythe for 3 hours, you're calling him the wrong name, it kind of blows your credibility. And yeah. I figure at the very least, you know, you get the names right, you know, at the very least, get their names right. And sometimes that's hard. Nowadays, obviously, with the sports information directors that are so good and the access that we have for information from a college level, it's a lot easier to do that than from a high school level. But sometimes at the high school level, I'm calling a coach, I'm calling the athletic director, I'm calling somebody, hey, how do you pronounce number 12's name? Let's get this right, you know. And that's just, you know, that's the basic stuff. But
love that.
Yeah, you know, you should at least get their names right. And but there's time and energy, you know, going into that, preparing. What you want to do is, sometimes I feel like I over-prepare. You have so many notes. I might have 2 pages of notes, but I might only get a third of that in, and that's fine. The game is going to dictate how much you're going to tell people and, you know, what's going on. But you just want to be prepared that this field goal kicker's got a big leg, and so his field goal range, if they get to midfield, they might try a field goal with this guy. You know, you kind of have to know those kind of things. And same with basketball. Is this a man team? Is this a zone team? What kind of press do they have? You know? It's helpful to go to the shoot-arounds, and the coaches usually are good about, you know, telling you those kind of things, and they might tell you a couple of things off the record. This guy's battling an injury or whatever like that. Keep that to yourself, but if you see me subbing him out, you're going to know why, you know, those kind of things. So there's a lot of preparation. I mean, people probably don't realize you might do 10 hours of prep for a two-hour ball game, you know, to make sure that you've got everything. And then something in the game might happen, and you still don't feel like you were prepared for it, but you try to limit that kind of stuff. But there's a lot of work that goes into that if you really want to take pride in it, and I certainly do, and I want to make sure that, you know, we kind of give the best effort that we can on the broadcast. The game you can't control. You can't control if it's going to be a 45-0 game. You know, sorry, but maybe if you've got enough information that you can kind of keep people around, because, you know, if the game gets out of hand, people have the remote and they're clicking to something else, you know. And so all that research that you did on the guard who studied anthropology, and you were going to tell some great story that his dad works at a museum, and, you know, you got to get that in at some point. And sometimes when the game's out of control, that's when you put that story in there, you know.
So how do you we were calling an Illinois State game. You went there, obviously. How do you separate not sounding like a homer or a fan versus sounding like a professional broadcaster, especially to those people that perhaps are tuning in from the other school?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And I think actually working in Peoria has helped me do that for several reasons. You know, being halfway between Chicago and St. Louis, and I'm a Chicago guy, so when I came here, you know, when I first came to Illinois State, by the way, I had no idea the Civil War between the Cubs and the Cardinals, right? I had no idea what that was all about. And I learned that I'm going to have to, you know, I got one guy to my left who's a Cardinal fan and one guy to the right who's my Cub fan. And, you know, we're going to hopefully have a good time with this, but I don't want those guys fighting one another. And the same with the Blues and the Blackhawks. And obviously the biggest thing with Bradley and Illinois State. So you have to play it down the middle. And if you want to have credibility, you have to treat it fairly. And so I tried to do that the best I can. I've called my fair share of Bradley Illinois State games. And even though I went to Illinois State, yes, I mean, you've got to call the game and you've got to tell people what's happening and put your fandom aside to do that. And it's easier for me to do that at a high school level because I'm not necessarily connected. You know, we cover 40 high schools, and I'm not, when Team A is playing Team B, I can pretty much look at that as Team A versus Team B and not have any emotional attachment. But you're right, when you go to school at Illinois State for 4 years and you were a fan first and then you started calling the games and all that, sometimes that can be hard. Now, I'm later in my career, I'm a little more removed from those emotional days when things were seemingly emotional. But yeah, I think there's a fine line. You want to show interest. You want to show emotion in the game. You want people to know that you're excited about the game and a play in the game without being overly excited that one team is playing in the game. Now, when Illinois State's playing, you know, Northern Kentucky, I did that game this year. I know that most of the people watching are probably Illinois State fans. And you know, and it may be obvious that I know more about Illinois State than I know about Northern Kentucky, but I'm still going to try my best to play it down the middle and make fans feel comfortable with the broadcast that it's not, wow, this guy is such a homer that it's crazy. I can't watch this. I've got to turn the sound down and, you know, just watch it on mute. You know, you don't want to hear that.
Now, you did work with Coach Morris, and he sometimes, you could tell he was a bird fan. He calls them the birds and everything, right?
And
you could tell he still has passion for the birds when he's announcing.
Yeah.
Which, as an Illinois State fan, you enjoy.
Yeah, which is great, which is one of the reasons why people like Bob, is because he's passionate, and, you know, he's a season ticket holder, and he's seen more games than I've seen, and I feel like I've seen a fair amount of games, but he's probably seen three times as many games as I've seen, and he's had a front row seat as a coach, you know, to see those kind of things. And I think sometimes where you really have to watch it is when you're criticizing the officiating, no matter what the sport is. You know, if Team A is playing Team B and Team B just had a bad call against them, you know, you have to somehow, you know, massage that without making it sound like you're piling on. And that can be hard. I mean, that can be hard when you really feel like, man, my team just got jobbed there. That sometimes can be the hardest thing. The game itself, fans are smart. They can tell, you know, when something is happening, but when there's a call that didn't go their fans' way, you got to resist piling on at that point, you know, and just try to say, okay, well, this was a call that, with the replays, sometimes the replay just tells the story, and you don't have to say a word. You know, hey, do you think this was goaltending or not? You can just kind of let the replay tell the story and move on from there. But it's nice to have passion to do the game without the passion of really being a cheerleader, you know, for one team over the other.
What you said is, Rick, what you just said, I just want to reinforce that. I think that's important. I think sometimes, especially when you're doing TV as a fan, you can see what's happening, right? And just, you know, subtle comments are good, but some people, like, they feel like they got to fill the air 100% of the time and sensationalize. And I think having a more balanced approach is always better, if that makes any sense.
Well, yeah, and there's a term in the business to let the game breathe. And by that, we mean that sometimes you don't say a word. You know, sometimes the moment can tell itself. You know, after a touchdown is scored and it's late in the fourth quarter and the team A just took the lead over team B, they came from behind, they drove down the field and they scored a touchdown and the crowd's going crazy. Sometimes the best thing an announcer can do is nothing, is say nothing, and let the pictures, let the crowd shots, let the cheerleaders that are jumping up and down, this, you know, and the high fives in the end zone, let that tell the story, because that's the emotion of the game. Kurt Pedler can't add to that. I can't say anything that's better than that, you know. So you're right. Sometimes the best thing to do is just to let the game breathe. And yeah, when there's a controversial call, is this ball in? Is this ball out? Is it goaltending? Whatever that is this pass interference? If the replay can tell the story, sometimes you just let the replay tell the story and let the guy at home, the fan at home, go, yep, that was pass interference. Or, yep, that was a foul. That should have been called a foul. You know, that's the way that works sometimes.
All right, Kurt, favorite games that you either covered or did play-by-play for? So give us 2, 3, 4.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Well, of course, I'm going to have to say that 1990 Missouri Valley Conference Championship game that John Pemberton was a part of, right? I mean, that's got to be there, and obviously that was a significant game. You know, Coach Bender's in his first year, and the Redbirds are playing great at the end of the year. Ricky Jackson. I'm just thinking about. Yeah, I get a rush of memories just thinking about that. The last Missouri Valley Conference Championship game played on a campus site before it turns into St. Louis in Arch Madness. Loud arena, just, and I was young in my career. And again, as I mentioned earlier, you know, when I first came to campus and all this NCAA stuff was happening, you know, you just think it's going to happen all the time. And there we are again. There's another NCAA. So probably in the first 5 years that I've been affiliated with Illinois State basketball, there's another NCAA bid. And you just forget about how special that time was. But that was a unique game. It goes down to the last shot, and it was just great television, you know, keeps the fans involved and just everything. That was a fun game. I was also at the last time the Redbirds won an NCAA tournament game when they beat Tennessee in overtime. That game was in Sacramento. I covered that game. When Kyle Cartmell drives the baseline, I can still see the play. He flips the ball to Dan Muller. He lays it in, and you know, there's still a few seconds left on the clock. Tennessee runs down and throws up a shot at the end, and that's it. And that's hard to believe that was, what, 1998. That one sticks out. Also, probably 2 years prior to that, when the Redbirds won an NIT game, the Redbirds were on the way up, the Rico Hill, Dan Muller, Leroy Watkins, Jamar Smiley team. They were in the NIT in 96, and they won a game at Wisconsin. And I was there for that game. And that was, I think, a second-round game in the NIT. It was not at the Kohl Center. It was at their old field house. And I think everybody and their brother thought that Wisconsin was going to win. This is this Big Ten team. Who are these guys from Illinois State? And I think Maurice Trotter was the star maybe of that team. Mo Trotter had a great game for the Redbirds. And I just remember thinking, okay, this is one of these milestone games for your program. You're turning the corner. This is, you're going to be, all these guys are coming back next year outside of Trotter. This is one of these building blocks that you're going to build a chance. In the next 2 years, they were in the NCAA tournament. The games in the Valley tournaments, those following years against Steve Alford's then Southwest Missouri State teams. Those are memorable too. Those were wars down there. Those were fun games. Those games I covered, probably the game that stands out the most as far as doing play-by-play for, and again, these are only regular season games and I haven't had a chance to do calling NCAA tournaments or NIT games or these other ones that I've mentioned to you. But the Redbirds in that 98, I think that 97-98 season, we did a game at Wichita State. They were down by 17 points in the second half and rallied to win that game improbably. You know, that was probably one of those games where you just say, okay, it's a flat tire. We're not going to win this one. They never gave up. They rallied. They win that game. And, again, one of those ones where you're leaving the arena, you're going, okay, now I know why this team is probably going to win the tournament, the Valley tournament, and win the conference. They showed the poise down the stretch, and that game probably sticks out because as a broadcaster, you know, when the game seemingly is out of hand, when it's a 17 or 18 point game in the second half, and you're starting to use what we call our filler, material, but the Redbirds wouldn't let us get to the filler material. They kept chipping away and coming back, and they won that game. So I think that game stands out. And again, I've already mentioned some of the football stuff that we've done, but doing a regular season game, a kind of a ho-hum game in February, that one turned out to be way more than a ho-hum game.
All right, Kurt, this is closing.
Well, I'm telling you, for your closing arguments, I know you always have people, you know, give thanks to. I am very thankful. I'm very thankful to Illinois State. You know, it got me an education. It got me all this hands-on experience to do my job. To have a college TV station and a college radio station that I could build some equity into my career as a student, as a 20-year-old, as a 21-year-old before I ever got a chance to do what I do for a living. And again, if we'd have had this conversation in the middle 80s and you said, by the way, years from now, we're going to be doing a podcast and you're going to be talking about meeting Arnold Palmer and going to NCAA tournament games in Sacramento and covering that kind of stuff, I don't know that I would have believed it. But that's...
You said, what's a podcast?
What's a podcast, by the way? And what's an email? But I just feel like it has opened the door to so many things. There's so many people to thank. I know I've already mentioned Jay Groves, who was our TV10 director, and at the time, Deb Lesser was the WZND faculty advisor, and she gave me some great advice when I was a senior in high school, senior in college as well. So I felt like I was surrounded by good people. The first interview I ever did at TV10 was with Duffy Bass, the baseball coach.
Wow.
It was the first interview I ever did. I interviewed Duffy Bass, I interviewed Steve Pasca, the swim coach, and Jill Hutchison, probably within a 7 to 10 day period, and they were all so gracious. I was a student. Yep. I didn't know if am I doing this right, you know, and they were gracious enough, and I felt like, okay, I'm in the right lane. I'm in the lane where I should be. And, you know, just little tiny thing. And at the time, you don't realize it. But when you look back, you're like, okay, these were all little checkpoints that made me believe that I could do this and I was in the right spot. So Illinois State's always going to have a huge part of my life. And like I said, I'm still thankful enough that I'm still connected with the university that we're not doing this podcast and I'm two time zones away and longing for the days when I could go back and have the cheese balls over at the pub too, you know, that kind of stuff.
Kurt, thank you so much for being on. This is episode 55 of Bird Fans Forever. John, hit it.
Come on.
This is where it comes. Yeah! Kurt! It's taken us 55 episodes to get here.
Yes.